Love Talk Radio.
Golden dreaming beauty man, is it only fantasy? Sometimes one can't help but wonder, will it ever truly be? Some people keep on saying, all is illusion and lies. Why is it so hard to believe? There are better days to see. So it seems like the world is tumbling down. It's the darkest time of night. Right before.
Yes, blessed souls, here it comes. We're now broadcasting via the Blessed Agency of blogtalkradio.com. And we humbly suggest with a higher inner frequency of blogtalkradio.com, we call ourselves Soul Class. This is Soul Class 541, Secular by Design, program presentation number 52. Blessed is our Creator. Shalom, peace, and bracha, blessing upon the human family experience. With Creator's help, where our next broadcast is taking place right now at 9:31 a.m., December 1st, 2015, 9:32 Eastern Standard Time, live from Turtle Island, a.k.a. the USA, Unifying Souls Actually. Program content will focus on reading from Alan W. Cecil's seminal work, Secular by Design, A Philosophy of Noahide Laws and Observances, which you can purchase by going to the link www.goodreads.com/books/show/18126658-secular-by-design. Our call-in number if you want to participate. We're going to do our show within about 35 to 40 minutes today. That's the duration of today's humble effort. Our number is 347-838-8669. That's 347-838-8669. Meanwhile, may the Eternal Creator bless and protect you and your loved ones peacefully and pleasantly. And the tag for today's program is part of our long-term empowerment agenda. It is in classes like this and our other selections that we humbly submit to you, blessed souls, either live or via the archive version. On Soul Class are the Divine Creator, Divine Image, Universal Redemption, Alan W. Cecil, Secular by Design, A Philosophy of Noahide Laws and Observances, Children of Israel and Children of Noah, all rooted in Noah, Adam, and everyone in between. And also, last but not least, meditate to end the hate, jealousy, and competition, which is not needed. But in order for us to go on with the show, we're going to have to lower the music for blessed brother and spiritual prayer partner of Isaac Batone. From Here Comes the Time, from his Generation Redemption album. And I just want to remind everyone, as we turn down the music, to Rabbi Isaac, sorry, Rabbi Isaac, oy vey vey, today's a new day, that every Shabbos, although this Shabbos I won't be there, but Rabbi Isaac will be holding a wonderful prayer service, which starts at 10 a.m. in Kessakron Heights, section of Brooklyn, New York, located at 143 President Street, called Beit Mazal, the House of Fortune, under the spiritual leadership of Rabbi Daniel Mapur. And there you can hear authentic Jewish Moroccan liturgy, or actually what's ancient liturgy, which is fused together with Jewish Moroccan songs. Now, we're going to now bring in one of our co-hosts, and that happens to be Rambam, teacher, student, and activist, and disseminator of the teachings of the Neshra Gadol, the great eagle, Rambam, Rabbi Moshe ben Maimon, Maimonides, Dennis Ryan. Good morning, sir.
Boker Tov, Don, and to everybody who's listening.
Okay. We're now, blessed souls, today is a day, if you're interested in doing some research, it happens to be actually considered to be a day of celebration within the Chabad Hasidic educational movement, because today, 200, and 19 years ago, I believe, 219 years ago, the first Chabad Rebbe of Shneur Zalman Eliade was released from the Petersburg prison, where he was brought up on false charges by followers within the Jewish community for dispersing and sharing the inner dimensions of Torah. And he was eventually freed. And also, in one of the letters that was written by the first Lubavitcher Rebbe, it was not only that himself was freed, but was also in order to explain to the members of the governmental administrators about levels of godliness and understanding the Creator, and what is the role of the Torah, what is his role as a Rebbe, to break away the misnomer that he was trying to side with the Turkish government, which had been in combat, had been in an adversarial stance with the Tsarist Russia government of the 18th and 19th century, with the Alter Rebbe, the first Chabad Rebbe at the time that he lived in. And in that spirit, I want to extract something out which would be something which could be extracted from the teachings of this great teacher and sage and righteous person by one of his direct descendants, the Lubavitcher Rebbe. And I'm just going to read not even a paragraph's worth, but to give you an idea of what the inner dimension combined with the revealed dimension, what oral Torah tradition and written Torah tradition, the message that is for every human being, I'd like to share it with you. And then we'll get some feedback from Dennis, and then we'll start to read from Alan's book, and also remind everyone of a personal public speaking engagement I hope to be engaging in next week. But first, I think I should start with the Rebbe's words. And here they are. On this day of celebration, the Rebbe wrote the letter, "To my brethren everywhere, God bless you all. Greeting and blessing." I'm going to read about a paragraph and a half, because I just want to give a little preface and a recapitulation, tersely, from what I just said. In connection with the Day of Liberation, the 19th of Kislev, the founder of Chabad, Rabbi Shneur Zalman of Eliade, author of the Tanya, who was released from imprisonment for the dissemination of Chabad, established freedom of thought and practice for the ideology and way of life of Chabad Hasidim in particular, and general Hasidism as a whole. And this is the point I wanted to stress. I just add the first part just as a recapitulation of what I mentioned beforehand. So here's the point, and then we're going to look to Dennis for some feedback on this. I wish to express herewith my inner wish that every one of us be liberated with God's help and by determined personal effort from all handicaps which arrest the good and noble in everyone's nature. So this be part of one's nature, that part of one's nature should reign supreme, which is the good and noble in everyone's nature, giving fullest expression to the love that one can express towards humanity. Dennis, your take on this matter.
Well, my take is life is good and all humans are good. Why? Because we were made in the likeness and image of our Creator. So therefore, there's nothing inherently bad in that creation. The only problem is what we develop in our minds as we get older. But I'm glad to see here that the rabbi is celebrating life and human nature.
Thank you, Dennis. Now, again, before we go into Alan's reading, the reading from his book, this Monday, if any of you will be here in New York City, in the Big Apple, there will be an annual Hanukkah celebration at the New York City Housing, or the HRA, Human Resources Administration, in connected with, and Dennis, maybe I'm forgetting the name of this branch of the New York City government, is connected with a Jewish organization whose name I have it right in front of me. This is the New York Housing Authority branch of the Council of Jewish Organizations Civil Service. And so, therefore, you are cordially invited. That means anyone, you blessed souls, that will be in New York City for the annual Hanukkah celebration, Monday, December 7th. The event will take place between 5:30 p.m. and 7 p.m. The place where this event will transpire, with the help of and the blessings of the Most High, is 90th Church Street, New York City, the fifth floor ceremonial room. Yours truly, your local international, hopefully you'll consider me a friendly cyberspace Torah activist, Don Goodman, will be speaking. The topic will be Jewish thoughts on universal issues. Join us on this joyous occasion for our Hanukkah candle lighting ceremony. Hear our Well, they said it, not me, blessed souls. Here are dynamic speaker. I am a Torah activist. That's what I am. Enjoy refreshments and gather with friends. Bring your friends. And I hope anyone who can be will be there. And I hope to kind of give a replication of what we do on the radio in a solo performance. And I hope the meditations of my heart with the words that emanate from my mouth with the blessings of Creator will have an impact that will enlarge in the circle of Blog Talk Radio Soul Class listeners and, just as important, participants. And maybe some of Dennis's, Dennis used to work there, maybe some of Dennis's former work associates will participate if they have the opportunity, and we can widen the circle. Dennis, any take on this matter?
No, but it sounds like it's a nice opportunity to hear positive things, especially from yourself, Don, who happens to be a good person, and Rabbi Mapua, who's going to be there, who I've always listened to, and is very interesting, and he's a rabbi that has a little smile every once in a while, but he has many things to share with people.
And he told me if I'm going to speak, I must wear a tie, so that's a big test for me. They're going to tie me down, Dennis. Okay, with that being said, we're now going to turn to page 103, apparently that Alan won't be joining us today, but that's okay. He's a very busy man, and we appreciate all the times in the past that he has joined us. Again, we're reading from Secular by Design, A Philosophy of Noahide Laws and Observances, page 103, in the section called Protocols of the Historian. And here we go. Let us re-examine the words of Immanuel Kant and his statement that, quote, only an educated public, which has existed uninterruptedly from its origin to our times, can authenticate ancient history, end of quote. And Alan's response was, and is in the book, when we place this concept within the proper context of the discontinuity of Greek history during the long centuries of the Middle Ages, a time when Greek history was forgotten among the uneducated public in Western Europe, we observe a flaw in Kant's logic and reason. Unlike the history of Greece, the history of Israel was kept uninterrupted not only by the Jews who were scattered throughout Europe and the Middle East, but with the non-Jewish Europeans themselves due to the inclusion of the Old Testament in the Christian Bible. Israel's history suffered no such interruption as the classical Greek history. This clearly refutes Kant's idea that all history should start out from Greek history, since there was a long span of time before Greek history and culture was introduced by way of Arabic scholars during the Renaissance. And I also want to add, it's not just Jewish history which has been not interrupted. I have been talking about from time to time about a radio show, which is actually in New York City, which you can also access through the net. It's called Let's Talk with John Kane, who is a Mohawk Indian or a member of the indigenous people of New York State and Turtle Island, as you would call it. We would call it the United States of America. And he talks about the continuity of their oral traditions with another American indigenous individual by the name of Theokas and Ghost Horse. And I know from my friends from Jamaica, my African Jamaican friends, they also are very quick to cite matters from ancient African culture which have been more or less been brought down in their oral traditions, the African oral traditions and the indigenous people's traditions, and I'm sure in China they have indigenous people's traditions as well as in the Middle East. So Dennis, why is it that Kant was able to sell this idea in Europe and bring it over to Western civilization America, that for some reason that we have to start within the context of Greek history, where not just the Jewish people, but also African oral tradition, Native American Indian tradition, again, I'm assuming that we have a continuous Chinese oral tradition. How was he able to sell this viewpoint when, historically speaking, it really flies in the face of other cultures which have had a longer ongoing, and I would like to say as well, not just for Jewish, but for the African oral tradition and the Indian tradition Asiatic traditions, they seem to be maintaining themselves without any sense of discontinuity.
Well, if you think it's discontinuous, fine, but I believe that Kant picked up from the Greeks, that is Aristotle and Plato, during the intermediate thinking and reasonings and understandings. He didn't pick up where they stopped or left off. So it was like cherry picking to a certain extent. But I would like to read two sentences that are quotes of Kant that sum Kant up. And let me just read it quickly. All our knowledge begins with the senses, proceeds then to the understanding, and ends with reason. There is nothing higher than reason. And he forgot about the whole idea, who created our minds to include that reasoning process. He picked it up from the human mind. And a lot of people think that the Greeks had the highest level of human mind because they depended on human reasoning. If you wipe out our creator and everything that he stands for, then you will say that the highest thing on earth is the human mind or the human reason. But that's discontinuous to begin with. He didn't go back to the beginning of who gave us the power to reason. He just said, because humans use reason, then the human mind is superb and number one on the planet.
So I'd just like to accentuate that point, that the Rebbe himself talked about at the time that the Hebrews or the Israelites, Jews, whatever you want to call us, when we were enslaved in Egypt, said that Egypt was the most intellectually developed civilization at that time, which was way before the Greek civilization. And we see that there is many aspects of ancient Egyptian architecture which bear testimony to active, fertile minds. And it's just that the problem is that we, you know, modern human minds have to kind of relearn that ancient hieroglyphic script, which is no less potent than, say, like English or German or Hebrew in terms of communicating messages. So he definitely picked up on some salient points. But again, we acknowledge within our own history, as a people with our own history dating back about 3,800 years going back to Abraham, that there were matters of intellect and human reasoning and architectural development and scientific development which preceded our own. So we don't have a problem within our own system of historical transmittance to acknowledge there were nations and peoples and intellects and ways of socializing and putting countries together which preceded our own. So unless Kant was, maybe it's just, you know, again, I'm conjecturing, Dennis, and you can respond and then we'll go further, that perhaps Kant was so to speak, giving into the ruling structure at that time in order to, so to speak, follow the party line. Any thoughts on that matter?
Well, he was more like saying that we invented reasoning. It was given to us by God. So therefore, anything that humans develop with their reasoning, it was through the Creator who gave us the free thoughts, the mind, to do what we want to reason, but it's our choice. Now, you mentioned ancient history. We have the Sumerians, who are considered highly advanced people, but we don't know enough about them. But they came before a lot of other people did, but we tend to ignore what that culture did and created, and we jump onto something that we can understand. So it's very easy to understand what the Greeks did, and that was solely in their mind. But they had some idea of the gods, but they didn't know how to express it. They didn't know how to define it, but they knew there was a god. But because they left a big question mark there, nobody ever picked up on it and said, well, if you continue that reasoning, then you must go this way or that way. No, they just said, let's not go too far with the Greeks. Let's just grab what they think they conquered, and we'll push that forward, and we'll call it Western culture. And that's what they did. You call it discontinuous? They leapfrogged from the normal human progression from the history of the world.
True. Well, the idea of discontinuity is something that Alan wants to promote in his book. Again, I'm a little short in terms of my overall knowledge of this period in history. So this, and it's been many years since, oh boy, it's probably 30 years, 29 years since I thought about Kant when I was in college. But we're going to go further now. We now turn our attention to the reasoning behind the Enlightenment version of history, of which, quote unquote, which facts to give the floor and which order or context, end of quote, particularly in the role Christian theology played in the retelling of historical events. So now we're moving on to the next section, which is still part of this is called Protocols of the Historian, where the title of this section is called All Roads Lead from Rome, as Alan chose to write that. And we're quoting from the collective writings of Rabbi Shamshon Raphael Hirsch, which the spiritual emphasis or the theological emphasis of this book is basically rooted in the teachings of Rabbi Shamshon Raphael Hirsch, who was a 19th century rabbi who was trying to fight the tide of assimilation within the Jewish-German population of the 19th century. And this is a quote from his book. The Jews were destined to be the eternal people of history, to wander the earth as the quote-unquote eternal Jew, to stand at the cradle and grave of all nations, to undergo the evolutions and revolutions of history, to suffer in the catastrophes of nations. From the shipwreck of the past, we were assigned the task of successfully salvaging the eternal spiritual heritage, or today, I think that's a misprint, salvaging the eternal spiritual heritage of all mankind. From the onset of history, we were given stern notice. Do not be dazzled by material might, no matter how brilliantly and meteorically it beckons on the historical firmament of nations. Do not tremble when sword-carrying nations subdue and brutalize the defenseless. Always be aware that the days of any power are numbered which fails to accept the certainty of the ultimate victory of man's spiritual and moral destiny. Now, I just want to make something very clear. When Rav Hirsch is talking about the grave, that the eternal Jew is to stand at the cradle and grave of all nations, I believe that's in the context of those nations who rose up in colonializing, oppressive fashion, contrary to the nature of what a nation should be, according to the seven Noahide universal commandments. Because obviously, not all the nations have gone from the cradle to the grave. Because look, 7 billion people, they came from somewhere. They weren't just created spontaneously. We don't believe in spontaneous generation, blessed souls. So I just want to put that in context. We're talking about the cradle and grave of nations that arose and fell because they fell out of favor with the divine task placed upon them, while we Jews were given a task, and we, at some level, did not fulfill it. We were sent into exile, and we've been working ever since then to remind the human family experience what is the task of all mankind. But again, we as Jews have to be culturally sensitive. We have to be human sensitive. We have to be heart sensitive. We have to be cognitively sensitive. We have to be emotionally sensitive. We have to be theologically sensitive to every nation upon the face of the earth, because again, the victory is for all of us, not just the Jews, but all of us, to actualize our spiritual and moral destiny. Dennis?
Yes, all humans are imperfect. We make mistakes. But that doesn't end anything. We make mistakes, but we can overcome and regroup and continue on doing, following the original truth that we believed in. By doing that, we will get back to the straight and narrow path. And that doesn't mean we're going to stop from making mistakes. We will continue to do that. But we must remember that the truth that why human nature, human beings was created, will still carry on. So we've seen that in the history of the world, that there's always some people who are trying to get back onto the straight and narrow and carry on. Why? Because you can't hide the truth. You can't disguise it. And you can't make believe it's something else.
True, Dennis. Now we're going to read further into this section, and we'll end up, of course, usually, as we have been prone to do, segueing out with a beautiful song, which we've played before, but it's worth playing again, by David Dohm. The influence of Christianity goes far beyond coercing Western academics to date the historical events in Israel in accordance to Christian theology, such as the way we number the years B.C. and A.D. before Christ and Anno Domini in the year of our Lord, which has to do with Christian interpretation and theology. Few members of the nations understand that according to the Jewish calendar, this is the year at the time that Alan wrote the book, it was 5771, just to update you, all blessed souls, it's not in the Hebrew calendar date from the emergence of Adam and Eve from the Garden of Eden, it's 5,776 years, not 2011, it's 2015. Christianity influences how we look at history, its context, and the importance we give to certain events. For example of Christian influence, we will start with Edward Gibbon, who is The Decline and Fall of the Roman Empire, first published in the late 18th century, is considered to be one of the great histories ever penned. Gibbon established that, quote-unquote, a candid but rational inquiry into the progress and establishment of Christianity may be considered as the essential part of the history of the Roman Empire. And that's quoting from Edward Gibbon, The Decline and Fall of the Roman Empire, New York, Modern Library, New York, The Modern Library, 1995, 347. So that must have been a reprint of Gibbon's work, because, of course, he's been long gone, probably 180 to 200 years ago from that time that he passed on. With that being said, that this book was considered to be an essential part of the history of the Roman Empire, Gibbon was vilified by many of his contemporaries for his criticism of Christianity, particularly in the role of the collapse of Rome. Gibbon's treatment of Christianity, however, was mild in comparison to his treatment of the Jews and Judaism. Even while being critical about the role Christianity played in the decline of Rome, Gibbon describes Jews and Judaism from the perspective of Christian theology, using theological terminology and concepts, such as his comments on the early Jewish church. And quoting here from page 594 and 595 from The Decline and Fall of the Roman Empire, again, published by New York, The Modern Library, 1995. Besides the general design of fixing on a perpetual basis the divine honors of Christ, the most ancient and respectable of the ecclesiastical writers have ascribed to the evangelic theologian of a particular intention to confute two opposite heresies which disturbed the peace of the primitive church, the faith of the Ebionites, perhaps the Nazarenes, was gross and imperfect. They revered Jesus as the greatest of the prophets, endowed with supernatural virtue and power, but they obstinately rejected the preceding existence and divine perfections of the Logos, or Son of God, which are so clearly defined in the Gospel of St. John. I have to admit, Dennis, I read the words, but perhaps you can untangle some of these things here. What is the point that Gibbon was trying to bring out here, because again, this is really, I read it in English, but it's a little Chinese to me in terms of my understanding of what's going on here.
Well, to understand that, there's a whole series of levels and layers of complications. So we have to be very, very careful when we take somebody who writes history and professes what was the best ideas or intentions during that period of history, because they're applying a judgment. And when they do that, it gets a little hairy. For instance, the historians have traditionally treated Judaism, Christianity, and the Muslim world as mystery-based religions. They call it mystery because there's no fact or proof offered to them that they can offer as evidence as to what the religion is. So because it's based on a spiritual or mystical founding, they say it's a mystery. So is that correct? All those people who were Christians, Jews, Muslims, they were all mystery believers? Baloney. But historians have always said that. So when you start looking at this or that, now, he's talking about the Gospel of St. John. Well, we have a lot of people over the period of history of mankind who have come out with their different ideas.
And just as you said in the original letter, that there were some Jews who believed that a holy man should be put in jail. Why? Because he disagreed with their views? Well, humans have been disagreeing with each other for a long, long time. And do people really want to know what the truth is? Or do they want to know, do you believe in what they believe so we can all believe it together? So togetherness is a fine idea, but that doesn't make it right. It doesn't offer any proof or evidence. So therefore, we must be careful of who we listen to and who professes to tell us the truth, because that's why we have human reasoning that Kant says we have, and it's very important, even though I disagree with him, it's the highest thing in the world, but it isn't. But we must use our mind, our freedom of thought, to understand, does it make sense? Because we still have to put it through the human litmus test so that we can accept it and now fit it into our entire human and spiritual world.
Beautiful, Dennis. And you meant about how people, there's a tendency for people to become judgmental. I'm going to be a little judgmental right now and have to make a decision that we've come to the end of our program, unfortunately. But I want to thank you most profusely for using one of your most valuable resources, your precious time upon this blessed earth. But before we sign off, is there any one last nugget of insight, wisdom that you've accumulated in Baruch Hashem, your blessed life, to share with our listening audience?
Since people are good and humans were made by our Creator, don't go around second-guessing yourself. You don't need to. What you think is the truth is probably the truth. So the old saying is, follow your nose, use your human instincts. They were not bad. When you were a baby, it was pure. You've had a lot of interference since then, but you can still make the right decisions.
Beautiful. Amen. I just want to end off before we play our segue music, which something which I believe I shared with when Dennis and I got together last week in our program series called In Search of Ancient Authentic Torah, the idea of charity and good deeds. And I think that now we're past Thanksgiving, and the truth of the matter is I think every day is a day for giving thanks. And we should be thankful that whatever we can give to our families, our friends, and our communities, and even strangers. Culling from the Compassion for Humanity, the Seven Noahide Laws of Noah from Rabbi David Sears, the Talmud considers charity the divine commandment that equals all the rest. We are merely custodians of the wealth we possess, the purpose of which is to improve the world as much as possible. In addition to benefiting others through giving charity and other altruistic acts, one overcomes the ego, ceases to be a taker, and becomes a giver. Even without completely pure motives, the one who gives is meritorious, for the receiver benefits in any case. The rabbis state that not only Israel, but people of all nations elicit divine mercy and protection through their acts of charity and good deeds. I don't have to be explicit. Everyone knows what I'm talking about. We right now in this world, because of certain mentalities that are existing and unfortunately spreading in different corners of the earth, are acting in a way which is the opposite of divine mercy and the opposite of protection. So here we have a instruction which is given to us from it was taught in the house of Elijah the prophet in the Talmudic tractate of the Bava Basra and Rabbi Yehuda Alevi in his classic work, The Kuzari. Here's some very powerful advice, which I think is connected to the section that we started reading from today, to help accentuate and actualize the ultimate victory of every human being's spiritual and moral destiny. But the context in which we can do it, as blessed is to understand that right in this moment, as we're going to segue out with In the Now by David Dome, help us get back home to realize we've got to do good, because even though that might generate some anxiety and some agita and whatever sort of mixed feelings we might have, HaTeva Tov LeHeitiv is the nature of the good to do good, and the Creator is the source of our goodness because he gave us this blessed life. And he also gave us a divine image will help us get on scrimmage. Our Tzelem Elohim is no dream. It is for real. You just have to look into your heart and you'll start to feel it, and as well as your mind, which is what makes you part of humankind, blessed souls. And all this may transpire in a way of in the now, in a way of ahava chad, one love, girl chad, one destiny kolana for all, but darchi noam, in a pleasant way, darchi shom, in a peaceful way, lahamshit bezer shem yisperech, continue with the help of the Most High Creator. Take care, everyone.
It don't matter to me where you've been. The people you knew and the places you've seen. If you've been hungover and you've broken a heart, we all have our very own place to start. There ain't no one who hasn't done anything wrong. Now's your chance to make it all turn out just right. Or will you put up a fight?
How do you want to keep?
Will you put up a fight?
How do you want to keep?
I've lived on both sides of the road. One in the sun and the one in the shade. The contrast is as clear as black on white. I'm seeing better in the light. Don't cling on to all your past misdemeanors. The past is done, what matters is where you are right now. Somehow,
how do
I understand
you
anything wrong, and now's your chance to make it all turn out just right, or will you put up a fight?
I'm
much better.